Hi, you're listening to another sermon from Deep Creek Anglican Church.
And they were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. "Woe to me," I cried. "I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for." Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send? And who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am, send me." He said, "Go and tell this people, be ever hearing, be never understanding, be ever seeing, but never perceiving." And the next reading's from Isaiah 9, verses 2 to 7, which I can't find. There it is. "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." Of the greatness of this government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. This is the word of the Lord.
Well, good evening, and let me add my welcome to Randall's. My name's Megan, and looking out, there are lots of people that I haven't met before. I'm the new-ish senior minister here, and it's really special to be here with you tonight on Christmas Eve. Now, our readings from Isaiah will be both familiar and unexpected, I assume. If you've been to Christmas services before, if you've received a Christmas card before, you may have received one that says, "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light, and his name will be called Wonderful Counselor." If you've heard any classical music in your lifetime, then you've probably heard that. But what we don't usually hear at Christmas is the context of the man who gave that prophecy, Isaiah, and his first encounter with God. And so what I wanted us to do tonight, in the short time that we have together, is to hear what it was like for Isaiah to meet God, to be transformed, and then to have that call spread to the nation and to the world. I really like Christmas lights. I like the classy type because I'm a classy lady. And I remember, you know, as I was growing up, just sitting and looking at the Christmas tree and just kind of taking it all in. You know, it's very kind of very sensual in that true meaning of the word. You know, you can smell the pine needles, and I guess if we were in the Northern Hemisphere, we'd be feeling a fire as well, although in Melbourne, you never know. Unlikely tomorrow. But, I mean, we have had hail. This picture is an Australian picture, which a house that won the Guinness World Record of all the most Christmas lights. They had more than 500,000 Christmas lights in their home. And that was in 2013, so I assume that someone has been bigger and better since then. Christmas lights to me seem to give us that moment that we long for that we don't see very often in staring up and spending that time really thinking about our place in the universe. We don't get a chance to see the stars very much, you know, in the city there's all kinds of light pollution, and quite frankly, we're so busy. I don't know about you, but it's been ages since I was actually able to kind of be by myself, have that time just to think and ponder and view and meditate and wonder. When I was growing up, I had this poster on my wall. This is the Horsehead Nebula in Orion, and it's about 1,500 light years away. And I think every child has that moment of being very fascinated by astronomy. And maybe they want to be an astronaut. I used to work at Ivanhoe Girls Grammar, and they had a program where students could go to NASA for a couple of weeks in a year. And I thought, sign me up. Apart from the fact it probably cost $10,000 on top of school fees, but sign me up. Kids love to look into space, and they love the thought that there is something wondrous and mysterious and vast out there. Something that we can't understand, something bigger than us, something exciting that if only one day we could walk amongst. The hard thing, I guess, as an adult is that things kind of start shrinking down on you. You have less and less time, less and less mystery, less and less wonder. And you find that these kind of spiritual moments and desires really end up just being something that's on a Christmas card. And you fear that you're the worst of all possible people in this day and age, and that all you've got is thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers got pretty bad rap this year when tragedies have occurred around the world. And we're longing for our politicians and our leaders in business and industry to do something. And so thoughts and prayers doesn't cut it. We feel helpless, small. We long for something bigger. Well, Isaiah in chapter 6 had that moment. King Uzziah had died, and he had been related to those in the king's court. And so he was now in the midst of personal turmoil as well as national turmoil. But of course, like a good religious person, he went to the temple. But maybe like a good Anglican, the temple was the last place he expected to meet God. But that day he did. He saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And they were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." I tried to get a picture of angels that would kind of work with Christmas and with this. And Christmas angels are way too cute, and they do not have six wings. But these guys, they had six wings so that there was a sense of reverence in modesty in covering their feet, in flying so that they could be quick to do the bidding of the Lord, and to cover their eyes even though they wanted to look. A few weeks ago, we spoke about Moses encountering God, and he encountered God as a fire, a burning bush. And we said fire is like that kind of paradox of being attractive, you want to be near it, and then just terribly destructive. And don't we know that in Australia at the moment? And that's the angels' experience here with God. They can't look upon his holiness and how powerful and other he is, and yet they can't not. They won't leave his presence. He's so beautiful to them. And yet his holiness is such that they cover their faces. Isaiah, who may be like you and I, felt like his wonder and mystery had just shrunk down, and he's in the midst of a place feeling pretty helpless, suddenly sees the Lord. And these angels show him exactly how great, how other, how high and lofty, lifted up and mighty he is. The thresholds shook and the temple was filled with smoke. "Woe to me," Isaiah cried, "I'm ruined, for I'm a man of unclean lips and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." This is the risk for us when we actually see reality as it is, when our small and helpless suddenly is opened to the vastness and hugeness and power of God. Suddenly, we do feel rather inadequate. And in fact, more than that, unholy. We're aware that we snapped at the kids in preparing for Christmas. We didn't really want to tell the truth on our tax return. We're jealous of what those people have, what they could give their children, what they received from their parents. We know that we are not as we were designed to be. And so when Isaiah encountered the Lord lifted up, he said, "Woe to me, I'm ruined." But then one of the seraphim flew to him with a live coal in his hand, there it is, which he had taken with tongs from the altar, the place of God's presence. With it he touched his mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips, your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for." What sort of God is so vast, so holy, so mighty that the thresholds of the temple shake and it's filled with his train and smoke, and yet would be so gracious that one who is clearly unworthy in his midst is cleansed from his very own presence? Well, Isaiah is given a call. God says, "Who's going to go for me?" And Isaiah says, "I will." And in the very next chapter, he's given a message to give to the people that a virgin shall be with child and she shall call him Emmanuel, God with us. And then two chapters on, we have this message. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. Now, the people of Isaiah's day weren't there with him in the temple. They didn't see God's holiness and light. They didn't receive the coal from the altar. And yet there was a promise here that something was to come that would bring all of them, along with Isaiah, into a place where they could stand in the presence of God. They could say, I'm both unworthy, but now I'm worthy. And they could be sent to the world. And this thing that would happen was a child. If we were to read together from verse 6, it says, for to us a child is born. This is the reason why the people walking in darkness have now seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness or the shadow of death, a light has blazed. For, because, to us a child is born, and to us a son is given. Now those words, as I said, are pretty familiar, but maybe we miss the fact that it tells us that the son is a gift. Just like that coal from the altar, from the very presence of God, the one thing that would enable Isaiah to stand holy in the presence of a holy God, the Son is the gift. This light of the world, and this is Rembrandt's painting, and then he used light and shadow so beautifully. That's where the light's coming from, not the Magi's lamp. Just as this child would light up this manger for Rembrandt, this child would be the gift of light to those who would follow him. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. It's beyond words to try and explain how a baby given can be all those things. It really is. And Christmas cannot sit by itself and be truly meaningful. You cannot have Christmas without Easter, if you like. The beauty of the gifts at Christmas, the beauty of the lights at Christmas, yes, absolutely, they draw us up. They tell us that there is a way to experience the wonder and the mystery and the vastness and the power that we long for and that we know we need. But the gift of the baby in bringing us light in darkness only makes sense when we know that this baby grew up and taught us the most sublime truths, healed the sick, showed the power of God over creation, and died an innocent death so that we could, from the presence of God, be made whole, be made holy. He was that coal taken from the altar, given for us, so that when he came to life again, we might no longer walk in the shadow of death. And of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing it and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. When Isaiah walked into that temple that day, I don't know whether he expected to see God. When you came here tonight, when you go and do your Christmas celebrations, when you take your moments, when maybe if you're a parent, you're like me, it's when you're in the bathroom. I don't know if you're expecting that anything can change. I don't know if you're expecting that there is actually a reality out there that can break into your life, that can bring you light in the darkness, that in fact can bring you whole and holy in the presence of the truest reality, the vastness, the light of the world. We're going to hear or sing together the song, What Child Is This? And I think that's my meditation for you. When we think about this baby born at Christmas, we need to ask, what child is this? That it would be the fulfillment of a mission born out of the vastness of God, who would give a son so that we would live in light.